Mr. Mohammed walked into our office while I was waiting with an activist who was engaged in activist activities during the apartheid era, and she said, "Mr. Landers, this is an old." She said, "Oh my goodness, not an old, not an old." Anyway, good morning, honourable members. We thought we'd just wait a little while to see if Mr. Mlangeni could arrive before 9:30, and he's honoured us by his presence before then. So we're most grateful. We had agreed that today's meeting wouldn't be long, and as you can see, the agenda is very short. I'm just going to call on the registrar to give us a brief update on where we. And once she's done that, we'll take questions if there are any, and then I will just report to you on where we stand with the document we referred to the chief whip of the majority party.
Thank you, Mr. Landers. There's some members here today who were not here when we tabled the document on the way forward for the Ethics Committee. It's a brief document which really looks at the program for the committee, going forward. And just in a nutshell, because I think, you know, if we just do a report without a brief input on that document, it will be difficult. I think that part of the thinking at the meeting was, we said that the committee, in responding to the issues facing on the ethical issue, there's a lot of media publicity and coverage on the issues of ethics. And the Ethics Committee, if it narrowly looks at members' interests, is not really addressing the core issues facing the country as a whole. So there's a suggestion that the Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interests lead a national campaign, almost, to look at ethical behavior by elected representatives. And the view was that the committee should institute a series of activities based on that, on the view that, you know, we need, Parliament needs to be seen to actually be addressing the issues and taking views from the community. So we said at the outset there needs to be very considered research, because you can't really start a program based on assumptions. So the first point is to do a massive national survey to look at issues relating to, first of all, what is the public view on improper behavior? How does it manifest itself in various communities? What is the actual lived experience of that unethical behavior? So, you know, how people experience that in their day-to-day lives. So we thought we needed to have, you know, because a lot of the debate at the moment is based on assumption and perception. So we thought we needed to do that. So at that meeting, we said there must be three pieces of debate. One is just like an attitude public, you know, in the panel report for the assessment of Parliament, for example, there was a view that only 5% of people could name a member of Parliament who wasn't a member of the executive. So 95% of people couldn't name any member of Parliament. So they're saying that also to understand what people's interactions are with their members of Parliament, who they are, et cetera, et cetera. So that public survey would be one aspect. The second aspect would be to look at the trends of improper behavior. You know, the Auditor General does trends of where there's unethical behavior at various levels. But nobody's pulled together that information in a systematic way. And we're thinking that perhaps we need to do a second piece of research to look at what are the key trends of improper behavior, and then the committee can address itself to how to respond to the issue. And the third is obviously to do a study of best practice in the implementation of codes of conduct, not just what codes you have in theory, but the best practice. So those are the three pieces of research that we think the committee should be doing. Based on that research, we said, you know, there are, in that document as well, it talks about, in South Africa we have a very comprehensive, what they call an integrity system. There's codes of conduct for members, for MPLs, for local government, for public servants, but the extent to which the public, if you look at the public perception, it's almost as if there's no rules, because the public doesn't know how to actually respond to improper behavior. So we thought that there needs to be a massive public education campaign that extends from, that's it's almost like building democracy, because if the public loses confidence in members of parliament and they believe that elected representatives are not honest, then you're actually undermining the democracy itself. So we felt that based on the findings of the surveys that we do a comprehensive education campaign telling people what are the mechanisms that they have, access to actually deal with the issues of improper and unethical behavior. So in a sense, do that public education, because all the codes were adopted at the top, but there hasn't been a systematic discussion. Following that, we thought that we should call for submissions, and the committee should have hearings both within Parliament and in the provinces to actually hear from communities actually on the issues related to it, because it's never been done. You know, the issue of improper behavior, corruption, is all bandied about in a very general way, but actually a serious address, and we thought the Ethics Committee is the right place to do it. So in a nutshell, of course, once you have the public education will also inform people on how to make proper focus submissions, because if you just call for submissions, you sometimes get what you also want. You want the experts to make input, but you also want the people's lived experience. And so if you give them an opportunity to make a proper focus submission, that will be quite useful. Then out of that, of course, we're saying that there needs to be a public, like almost a conference and a seminar, where we have a proportional representation system. The party influence is very powerful in how the behavior of their elected representatives, you know, turn out. So commitments from political parties on what is the standards of acceptable behavior from their members, etc. So actually a public pledge that this is what we will be holding our members accountable for from all political parties. And not to say, and, you know, not to be an acrimonious discussion, but to take forward a very positive discussion on the standards of behavior, actually in a way to show the political will for ethical behavior. And then, of course, the matter must be debated in the houses, and then resolutions can be passed for the amendment. So in the process, we're going to do an amendment. We can hire experts to start drafting, as the information comes out, to start drafting revised codes for Parliament at a national level. And the outcome of that, the product of that, will be a revised code of conduct and recommendations on national ethical standards. We didn't go for the issue of the public service, really, because that's going to make it too big and impossible. And our focus really then, of course, this thing should be a cooperative venture, so we should be working with provincial governments through maybe the Speaker's Forum, with local governments through CELGA. So it can be, it's a massive campaign with a lot of work. And I think that the chairpersons had indicated that it can only start after the World Cup, because there's not going to be time in this term. And during the World Cup, there's too much other noise in the public space, you know, in the media space. So it should be after the World Cup. I've already done some of the graph work, but of course the way forward is we need to get the chief whips to agree that we extend the mandate of this committee. And so Mr. Landers will give a report back. He's spoken to the chief whip. I think the matter must go to the chief whip's forum. And then on that basis, they will pass a resolution in both houses. And then only we can proceed, because we can't proceed. This is outside our mandate.
Thank you. Could you just clarify something? You said just now that research had shown, or you believed some research you referred to showed that very few people could actually name politicians. How does that sort of identification of parliamentarians in any way fall within the mandate of what we're supposed to be doing? I mean, I understand they'll know if this committee finds someone has breached parliamentary ethics to the extent they have to be called to account. They would become known for that. But how are we... I don't understand how that's considered to fall within the mandate of this committee.
You know, it really is about the understanding of Parliament, the image of members of Parliament, and knowing who they are, etc. Now, this is just an aside, because, I mean, you know, to say... You see, to when you do a survey on Parliament, I think that it would be quite important for us to also gauge the public perception of who and what members of Parliament are. But if an Afrobarometer survey shows that less than 5% can actually know name a member, what are our expectations in response? But, I mean, you know, that's an aside. I'm just saying that we need to get a sense of the public. You know, as I said, a lot of the debate on ethics is really about perception. And so, yeah, that's just meant to be an aside.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to just commend Ms. Mohammed for the work that she has done. I think it is long overdue that we as Parliament have just come to accept that the perceptions about us outside there doesn't really matter. It does matter. So I want to support such a campaign 100%. But what I want to ask in terms of clarity is that you said that we will then, the whole process will culminate into a revised code of conduct. My question is, I think the time has come, and Mr. Landers will remember when we looked at the Ireland example in 1997, that it should not only arrive at a draft or a revise of the code of conduct, but we should actually bring about an act of Parliament to make it stronger. We should look at bringing about legislation that can enforce the code of conduct. If we as the committee would like to go that route, that the outcome of this process be an act of Parliament, how does the rules accommodate us for this? Can we as the Ethics Committee also draft legislation? I suppose that's not part of our mandate. But if it's not part of our mandate, can we then request the Chief Whip's Forum to extend our mandate to include that this committee can also make legislation?
See, you see now, once you start, it's like a snowball. It just goes. You see, those are some of the ideas that we've already bandied around in our discussions prior to bringing this to you. And yes, we had thought about legislation, but we didn't want to get ahead of ourselves. You see, you start here first, getting little things like a resolution in the House, getting them to extend our mandate, and little things like that. And then slowly it will snowball. Certainly we foresee legislation, but as I said, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. Let's just do the groundwork and make sure the foundation is solid, and then once we get there, we'll be on solid ground. Begi, followed by Dumsile, and then Ms. Kolobana.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. I'll also concur with Honorable Dili that Ms. Fatima has done a lot of good work concerning this thing. She must be commended for that. But also, at the same time, I think that we must have also some sort of a vision where we want to go to. Because part of the weakness which I'm having with this code of conduct is that, you know, the sanctions are not strong enough. Hence, if they're not strong enough, people will get away. You know, fine of 1 week's salary. I'm telling you, when you... But the damage which you do to the image of Parliament is sometimes irreparable. It's true. That's how they said that the people don't know the members of Parliament. It's true. They only know those who are doing misdemeanors. Those who are doing good things, they don't know about them. So that's why we have to defend the image of this Parliament. I think this work must be supported. It must go forward. But ultimately, also, we must have an act of Parliament. That one must be... if real is either we abandon this committee or we have an act of Parliament which is going to be enforceable, so that at the same time we must also protect the members, because some of the things which are raised are malicious. Take for example, you go to a constituency, you beat someone in a by-election or you beat someone in a list conference, you start spreading wrong things about you, whereas they are not there. So I think that if there's an act of Parliament, there can be protection that those people who can be malicious, they can be dealt with. But I think that was must be our foresight we were going to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to support the idea of maybe public education and public involvement in public hearings. But I just want to add maybe that we can also add provincial legislatures, because we are abide by same code of conduct. And also, I just want to check, Ms. Fatima Kuti, where have this survey that you mentioned here was done
of 95% of people not knowing members of parliament, and 5% only get to know example. I'm so worried because I'm from a huge constituency. So if maybe the survey can be conducted to my constituency, maybe the percentage will increase. And also, Chair, I just also want to echo the issue of maybe we can bring it after conducting the public hearings and the public education. And with pamphlets, I just want to add the issue of public education goes hand in hand with pamphlets. Maybe if we can have some pamphlets that can be distributed to communities to know what is the public representative conduct entails. And also maybe the issue of debating after we have conducted all those, I strongly support it. But with the recommendation, there must be some amendments of somehow, like other members have said, that there is a loophole weakness on the code of conduct that we have at hand. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Yes. Look, this is the first time I've actually felt this committee suddenly galvanized into doing something. I don't know what happened, but yeah, I know you've done an enormous amount of work, but the damage that's been done to Parliament by Travelgate was so huge, and the little slaps on taps on wrists and things were seen by the public as, I mean, the image of Parliament really was damaged so badly that if we indeed came up with legislation that said if you are found to do something of that magnitude, that is the punishment you will face. I think the public would really welcome that enormously, because frankly, they don't trust politicians anymore. They say you're all thieves and liars, and you take money and you fly around the world and you send your relatives around the world on our backs. And if legislation could indeed be brought together to ensure that people face the harsher sanctions for thievery and skullduggery, then really, this committee actually would have been worth the gathering. Thank you. Yeah.
Chairperson, thank you. I just wanted to add to what you were saying about pamphlets. While we are taking them to communities, let them be in the community's own languages. It becomes a problem when I stand in front of the community and talk to them in English. It's only a few, the teachers and the nurses and the civil servants are the people who understand. But what about the old people that would like to hear and understand what's really going on? You know, it's difficult if an old lady is looking at TV and they're talking in English. Okay, SABC 2 or 1. Sometimes it's in Pedi, Venda, Songa, Zulu, Xhosa, and other languages. And they become excited. They'll come and ask you, yeah, we heard that in Parliament you people are doing 1, 2, 3. But she heard it from the TV. Said, where is it written? Want to read and understand. And they like reading, these old people. They like reading because when these small kids come back from school, they read to them, do you know about this? And when they see a newspaper, even if they don't understand what's going on, they say, what's happening with this person? What does this person want on this paper? Explain to me. So let's please do it. I appreciate what you have really done. It's really nice. And when she says 95%, I'm asking myself that the 90% really, maybe, I don't think it's 90%, 95%. Just make it 50%. Because even some of the members here in Parliament, really, we don't know the ministers. We don't know who the ministers are. Okay, I know this is the minister, but what in which department is he? I really don't know. Each and every time who's this one? Especially those who are sitting next to opposition. Who's that one? Who's that one? Thank you.
No, I think she's referring to an independent. She didn't do the survey, all right? It was an independent survey and was based on perceptions. So don't be alarmed. Don't be alarmed. All right. Now, honourable members, you can see why we knew this was going to happen. You know, when the registrar, myself, and my co-chairperson discussed this, we knew that once it begins, it has its own momentum. You see, and so the ideas that's coming from you, you can well imagine now, when we take it to a much bigger forum, civil society, NGOs, that the ideas that's going to come forward are going to be enormously helpful. Mr. Lowe.
Chairperson, can I add another idea? I'm feeling very excited about this project. I think and since Mrs. Mohammed mentioned that, Ms. Mohammed mentioned that the whole idea came about, you know, some of the bad publicity and things in the media. But the most current one, which also needs to be interrogated, is the issue of private political funding. Now, this has also got a history from a court case of IDASA from 2005 right up till now. Just to share a bit of information with you is that from the ID side, we've been trying to put this on the agenda since the days of President Mbeki, who had suggested that Parliament look at after the court case. And we have, for the past 3 years, been shunted from pillar to post. We seem not to find... Yesterday, even we arrested in the joint rules. The joint rules said, no, it must go to the Chief Whip's Forum. There seem not to be a place in Parliament where actually this idea could start. Because when Ms. Mohammed mentioned about a PR system, that's correct. We've got a PR system, and here's... The political parties are very powerful. But linked to a PR system is the political party itself. Now, we've only developed South African code of conduct and code of ethics to members of parliament and MPLs and ministers. I think we should maybe venture into looking how you could also include political parties and explore and do some research and look at other countries, you know, what are the precedents there. But I was wondering whether it will fall as part of this brief maybe to just explore that avenue too, so that we have members of parliament, MPLs, councillors, and political parties in terms of private political funding. Because that has been a debate that's also been raging currently in the papers a lot, and I'm sure I don't need to mention the example. That's the one that I want to put in, Chairperson. And the other one that I don't know whether the Ethics Committee will be able to help, and I think part of the perception that we are all cowboys and crooks here at Parliament is the accountability of Parliament. but yes. So you know, a part of this perception in the public, and I agree 100%, Ms. Mohammed, we have to deal with that, is the accountability of Parliament. In terms of the separation of powers, you've got the executive is accountable to Parliament, and we've got oversight over the executive. Who's got oversight over Parliament? Parliament has got the presiding officers. What's the POA? Parliamentary Oversight Authority. So Parliament, we are the watchdogs. And we are actually, and my question is, who is watching the watchdogs?
The voters.
Yeah. But there should be also some kind of accountability system within Parliament. And you know, Chairperson, I don't want to do it. I actually feel... You know, not as an unpatriotic member of Parliament, but when I was seeking some information from Parliament, I was told, if you want any information, you should use the Promotion to Access to Information Act. And so now I have to do it. I'm forced to go to a court of law as a member of parliament seeking information from parliament. And I'm raising this because I think the Joint Ethics Committee, it could be a forum where, even if we don't take decisions about it, but where we can seek some guidance about, you know, these concerns, you know, for us, the old dinosaurs who've been here for 15 years with Mr. Mr. Landis, to, you know, you... I said we are dinosaurs. I would really welcome this debate, and to look at how we could do it, maybe not in a committee form, Chairperson. If we could go for a half a day or a day as the committee and just brainstorm, and to add flesh to the ideas of Ms. Mohammed, it will also help us. Then, you know, we're not in the public eye. We can speak freely. We can make ideas and suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think that when, as we are operating as this committee, right now we are not even having an Act of Parliament which is guiding us or regulating our work. But the fact that we don't even have a legislation, it means that it's going to be an uphill struggle to go and even market the idea of having a legislation around that. So what I think, Honorable Chairperson, is that let us take little bit of bites which you can be able to chew. I think that the issue which Honorable Tilly is raising, the issue of political party funding, I think that, yes, it does deal with the image of Parliament, but is it the proper forum to doubt this thing we're doing with that now? Because really we don't want to create resistance to what has already been started. Ne? So what I'll appeal for, I understand even this issue of the watchdog, of the watchdogs, it's a critical issue, but let's take these things step by step. Ne? Let's take with this one and see where it takes us. Ne? And then after they've dealt with this issue of the survey and the results are coming back, then we go and appeal for the legislation. If we are successful, then it's fine. Then after that, we can come and then look at this issue. But that does not mean that we cannot even speak. We can speak about that. But to push for it and put it together with this thing now, we are going to make our work very difficult. You know very well, Chairperson, that even to impose this sanction is so difficult, né, to deal with these issues of ethics as it is now. Né. So when we put extra stuff on our backs, I think the camera is going to break its back. So, all right, yeah, please. Let us be careful in our excitement. Thank you.
I just want maybe a comeback chair to Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, to go back to our last meeting, maybe in refer to our last resolution, because it links with the discussions that we're busy with today. We made a proposal of saying that the committee must get a research. First, I don't know whether we've managed to get that one. A researcher which will come up with a document that will make an audit on the current code of conduct that we are having. And after having an audit on that code of conduct that we are having, the current one, we propose that we discuss it and we take it, after finishing it, we take the draft as a subject to get a legal opinion. I want to check whether we have gone through that one. And also to check, the researcher must also check and measure the international standards of other code of conduct. That was our last proposal in our last meeting. And after doing that, we are looking forward maybe to bring those on board and connect it with today's discussion and the problem. We also recommended that after gone all those processes, we must cost. The program must be costed so that we'll be able. I've made mention in my last input. I've put in pamphlets which maybe they need a budget on that one. So I appeal, Chairperson, in our next meeting, must go back to the proposal and recommendations of the last meeting and this one, maybe the next meeting will be a little bit broader and having a broader program that will be costed. Thanks, Chair.
Before you come in, let me just. I was going to do you a little report. Dumsila and Kengedwa's notes are very accurate. That is the sum total of our previous meeting. You'll recall that halfway through our meeting, my co-chairperson, who had been tasked with sitting down with the chief whip of the majority party to brief him and get him on board and to try and obtain his blessing, he came and joined the meeting and reported that, yes, indeed, the chief whip had given his blessing, but he had requested a document from us so that he had something in writing for him to sign. That's where we're stuck at the moment. The registrar's office sent that document to him. It got lost. He's got a huge office. It got lost. And early in the week, I then got another copy from the office and took it down to them and said, now look, this is the second one. Well, it nearly got lost again. Anyway, yesterday he called me aside and said he's leaving, which means he'll only be back on the 4th. And he's tasked the deputy chief whip to sit down with Advocate Masuta to look at any legal implications. He said he doesn't want to put pen to paper and then find he's agreed to something that has legal immunity. All right, that's fine. So I'm hoping before I leave today to collar the deputy chief whip and Mike Masuta and say to them, well, have you reached anywhere? So that's where we stand with regard to that. Once we've got that okay, which is a formal thing, then we can proceed, because it says, amongst other things, that the houses must adopt a resolution expanding our mandate, right, and allowing us, because there are budgetary implications, by the way. In our initial discussions, we said, should we let an NGO lead this thing? And we said, no, it's only a proper that Parliament should lead it. And that means it's going to cost some money. If at the end there's this conference or seminar and we invite people, so all that is involved. So that's where we stand, Comrade Dumsila, with regard to the research and everything.
Thank you, Mr. Landis. The issue of employment of a researcher is a more long-term thing which Parliament will have to create. But I had spoken to the Parliamentary Research Unit, and we thought that actually we need, instead of one researcher, we should outsource the research, you know, call for some research institutes to do the big research, like the survey, the national survey, and also some of the audits and all of that, instead of getting one person who won't be able to finish it on time. So I sat with them. They've done a draft terms of reference, but of course, until we don't have the approval, we can't formal table those documents. So I've done three proposals, a request for research. Of course, with the money, we'll have to get it. I shouldn't say this, but I mean, I think that we will get the money. If there's buy-in at a political level for the idea, then the administration must provide the money. That's really how it goes. If the houses resolve that this campaign must continue, then the money will come for it. So the issue of the finances, I've done the costing as well, but I didn't want to preempt the decision of the chief whip, because if we're tabling documents before there's a formal approval, I was saying to Mr. Landers, I don't think it's appropriate. But the documents are ready. I've done initial meetings with the public education sector. The issue of a comprehensive media strategy, including radio discussions, you know, in all languages, all of that is part of the plan. But once we get the formal approval, we can table all the documents. The committee, I think the idea maybe, Mr. Landers, that Mrs. DeLille suggested, where there's a meeting of the committee to go through the massive project plan we can have and go through all the details, and the members must be given full opportunity to make input on all the proposals.
Yes.
Something that I think has worried people for a long time is that this body seemed to be a toothless watchdog. You know, as a committee, if it's going to be effective, and I think we've all seen this in our own committees in Parliament, where there are little subcommittees that are supposed to be watchdogs but actually have no power at all, and to be effective. I mean, this watchdog's got to have teeth. So I would just say, please, in your proposals, and I understand how difficult it will be. I don't know, you might think maybe it's insurmountable to actually get political parties to agree on something, where one party may say, well, you know, that if someone does X, they must actually be thrown out of Parliament, but three other parties may disagree. So there's a lot of discussion and horse trading that has to go on. But if this committee can come up with a document that really does provide Parliament with the teeth that it should have to deal effectively with the sort of what the perception is that it's actual criminality, to deal with that effectively, I think really the face of Parliament will have received a major spring cleaning.
We can all hear the bell and the ringing and the light flashing. This little discussion has been good. Now, there's just one little outstanding matter. June is World Cup month. Okay. So I had said to the registrar, we are normally given a month in which to distribute declaration forms and have them returned. It's a month. And that month is normally June. Yeah. So I said to her, well, under the circumstances, then, let's be a little flexible. We distribute the forms towards the end of May, just before we leave or rise, okay? That gives members the entire month of June. Then the first, second week in July, when we've returned, those forms must be returned. So members are actually given more than the usual month, yeah, in which to fill in and return their forms. There can be no excuses after that.
Have I got this? I've got in my diary that we reconvene on the 19th of July. So not in the first two weeks, no one will be
well,
back.
Well, that's the
so
19th.
Whenever we come back. First 2 weeks of when we come
whenever
back.
We
now
come
that
back.
Makes sense.
All right? Yeah. So what the registrar had asked is whether today we're in a position to determine that date in May when the forms could be distributed. That's the first thing, okay? It'll be determined by the date on which Parliament rises. Ms. Kolobana, I don't know whether your diary tells you that.
24th? Yeah, in the Antioch, the 4th of June.
It's 24th. Oh. Right. Ah, so it's 4th of June. Well, no, let's come a little bit back then for a date end of May, thereabouts. If you can agree to that just without taking a formal decision, then we'll agree that we're going to meet when we come back now after this 1 week recess. We'll meet again and then formally determine the date. With the help of the registrar.
Chairperson, what is the date for declaration, the year for declaration, from which month to which month?
It's normally the month of June. We
so
distribute
from June
the
last year to June,
June
this year
this
we
year.
Must declare.
Yes, yes. That's normally how it works. But of course, Mr. Lill, you realize that the Soccer World Cup, you know, and you can't be piggish about it and say, no, it's June, you must do it, because you're inviting ridicule. No one will return their forms. And again, it's just we'll be kicking the ball. No. That's not the intention at all. will be yes. Okay. And of course, given the fact that, as Mr. Mlangeni says, it's 6 weeks, no member can then complain and say, well, you know, the usual complaints that we... Yes. And then what I thought, which I hadn't discussed with her, is that through the media, we send out constant reminders. Through members' emails, we send them a reminder. Hopefully members open their emails. I'm a serial offender. I open it when I think about it. Yeah. No. But well, I do. But the point is that if through the media, when we get back and we start saying, right, come, we want your forms, no one can then say, oh, I forgot, and you know this. The usual stories, Mr. Lil and Ms. Mohammed. So that's the thinking behind it. That'll do too. Yes. Sure. Okay. All right. We'll get away from 94. Yeah. All right. Honorable... sorry. Yes.
So, Chairperson, I think I went several times to Mohammed's office. My problem is one. Can't this committee be programmed like other committees? Because I've realized that when people are supposed to come and attend here, you find that there are committee meetings, and really I cannot leave a committee meeting and come here. It's a problem, it becomes a problem. But if it is programmed, it will be easier for us to come and attend.
We give you
adequate notes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Please remember, Comrade Mangena, because we're a joint committee, the Joint Rules Committee decided all joint committees can only meet on Friday. Fine. No. The point is that the reason they took the decision was to prevent members saying, yes, but you want me to attend the Joint Committee on Ethics? I've got a justice meeting. I've got a trade and industry meeting. See, so they said, all right, all you joint committees, Friday is your day. And that's, but we take your point, and we'll try and give you adequate notice, 2 weeks, so that by the time the Friday comes around.
We want to be, we
especially what Diane Kola Barnard is saying.
And
about
what Diane Barnard says,
you
know. So that, thank you. So I think we shouldn't change all the time.
Okay. Honorable members.
Love it.